First of all, I guess the governance reform that's being proposed, I think I need to make mention from the outset that the various organizations, the key stakeholders in the region, TSET being one of them, Torres Shire Council being the other local government in the area, and also the TSRA, which is the Torres Strait Regional Authority, which is the common statutory body up in the region, which Nigel Scullion has carriage over. We formed up a coalition in regards to this particular topic in regards to this movement. Simply put, the proposal that we're basically taking to the table, and it's basically unanimously supported by all three key agencies, where we basically, we've identified that there's millions and millions of dollars that are basically being channeled and funneled by both state and Commonwealth into the region. We believe that we're not getting value for money. We've got layers and layers of bureaucracy. We're overly represented. We're overly regulated. Just like Queensland is, but more so in the Torres. When I walk down the main drive on TI, it's almost like George Street in Brisbane. And I've had these discussions directly with the state ministers too as well. There's that many departments that have set up shop on Thursday Island, which is primarily used as the administrational hub to service the community. They're barely justifying their existence. There's a lot of duplication. There's massive risk, and we've actually experienced where we've got certainly stakeholder misalignment. So in terms of the governance reform, what we're actually proposing moving forward is to look at establishing one entity. So when you look at it, one entity would actually administer the roles that Torres Shire Council and Torres Strait Island Regional Council administers as a local government in terms of administering core local government or municipal functions, and the role that the Torres Strait Regional Authority, the Commonwealth statutory body, administers, where its primary focus is to administer and, address the building blocks of COAGs. So essentially, we're looking at one entity to amalgamate all those functions and set of responsibilities. It's a unique entity or a body in nature, because when you look at it, you've got functions that are devolved to an entity from that's basically covered off in under a state jurisdiction, and also under a Commonwealth jurisdiction too as well. We've gone to the extent where we've had conversations with both state and Commonwealth in regards to commissioning a productivity review, because we believe that there's a large number of entities that are barely justifying their existence in the region. So you certainly need to actually go through with a report card with a fine tooth comb in terms of looking at what set of deliverables have been achieved, rather than just basically a tick and a flick every financial year.
Yeah, right, because I'm actually looking at your recommendations for your governance reform, and it's very clearly stated. You're not caught up in a lot of rhetoric, as far as what you're actually proposing. So it seems like you've made it as simple as possible in what your, requests are.
Mm. We feel that with this governance reform, we've got a wonderful opportunity in terms of working towards addressing the high unemployment rate that we have in our communities too also. In terms of looking at providing real employment outcomes as opposed to families being tied to CDP, the CDP is work for the dole scheme, and our families out in the communities, they don't have a choice. They don't have, the option is not there. So it's not like they're not keen on working. It's just that opportunity doesn't present itself. In light of the governance reform, we believe the model of service delivering, rather than having these communities, my communities, being serviced through a fly-in and fly-out arrangement, the question needs to be asked, why do we need a FIFO arrangement in place, especially for people to actually deliver programs that can be delivered from the grassroots level? A lot of people that are basically delivering these programs and services out in the communities, these roles don't require a degree. It begs the question, why are people being employed rather than us addressing from outside the communities, rather than addressing the high unemployment rate within the community and to provide these services right at the coalface?
Let's move into one of the other key areas. I don't know which one you want to talk about first.
We'll talk a bit about the issues surrounding, I guess, the treaty arrangement, more so in terms of what that arrangement basically triggers. I'll link it back to the budget papers again.
Yep.
There's been some investment made, I think $3 million over 3 years, in terms of combating the aspects of mosquito-borne diseases such as the Zika virus. And I couldn't help noticing that there's been very little detail in the budget in regards to addressing the real threat to Australia, not only Torres Strait, but Australia as a whole, and Torres Strait is certainly part of Australia, is the multi-drug and super-strain TB. It's almost like Ebola with wings.
Mm.
It's airborne. People can contract. It's a virus that can be spread through being airborne. You can get it from sitting in a plane, traveling with somebody with TB, especially if they're basically, if they've got a deep cough. You can get it from somebody sitting in a cab, can, you know, walk down a busy street and pick it up. So I think, you know, more has to be done in this space. And I think one of the key messages and the drivers in this space that we've been saying is we know for a fact that millions and millions of dollars have been invested in foreign aid in terms of addressing this particular issue in the Western Province area. You know, I've been attending various interagency meetings where we've been briefed in terms of being provided with all these glossy reports that everything's rosy peach, but that's not the case. The number is still on the hike. The number is still increasing. So the question needs to be asked, what is really happening? The Australian government really needs to apply real pressure in this area, because Torres Strait is the doorway of into Australia. When you look at it, my communities, the 14 communities that have responded to the Torres Strait Treaty, three of those communities are only less than 10-minute boat ride in a tinny to Papua New Guinea. You can stand on the shores and you can see Papua New Guinea. In terms of movements, in terms of human traffic, we've had an increase from seeing 26,000 to 27,000 people from 1 year to up in the 50,000 mark. You know, when you look at it, there's no border security facility in these communities. We do have local officers that are employed by the Commonwealth agencies, but they, you know, to a certain degree, they're basically powerless. The powers to be are sitting on Thursday Island. So there's nobody out in the coalface. So it certainly is, it's scary. It's considered to be reaching epidemic proportions. And I think the Australian public needs to know that multi-drug-resistant TB and super-strain TB. To treat TB, it takes about 18 months to be on a treatment, constant treatment program. 50% of the people that have contracted multi-drug-resistant TB will not be cured. 75% of people that contracted super-strain TB will not be cured. They'll end up dying from it. This is real. This is a real threat into Australia, and Torres Strait is there as the doorway into Australia. We're basically Australians at the forefront here, and the exposure is massive.
And these all link to health. Like, I'm listening to you and I've been reading your paper here. I mean, when you're talking about governance reform and infrastructure and essential services, and now you're talking about moving into international border and Torres Strait Treaty, as well as something that we're going to get onto next, climate change adaptation, all of that links to the health of your people. This is a really important part of, I guess, the responsibility that the federal government has in meeting targets for, you know, closing the gap, but also, you know, on the ground, your people's lives. Do you want to talk a bit about that and how it all links up and move into the climate change adaptation?
There's been basically talk in regards to, you know, what would happen if people were directed, traffic were directed, and, you know, what you just imagine what would happen if a couple of boatloads of people hit Cairns and directly from New Guinea. What would be the reaction then? This area of concern really needs to be addressed. Ebola with wings, I think that basically speaks for itself, and I think that was rightly put. I think it was an article that was the title when Dr. Furin basically spoke. This is a specialist in that field where she's basically really concerned at the rate and how it's being poorly managed. My people are certainly at the forefront and we are very, very exposed. So we certainly need government intervention, and I think we need to be stop being a little bit too conscious about jeopardising international relations, because we've got Australians to think about here.
And how would you have that managed, though? I mean, wouldn't that include almost a military presence in your waters?
We've been talking about a joint facility. I know Queensland government is keen. You know, certainly need the federal government to actually put some investment towards it. We need a joint facility to be built out at Sidebay. There's absolutely nothing down on ground there. You've only got presence of local officers that are basically completely powerless. You need the authorities based out at Sidebay, where the main traffic is, because the departments responsible for managing this arrangement basically uses Sidebay as a main administration hub in terms of, you know, doing all the paperwork and so forth before people visit the other 13 communities. We need that presence out at Sidebay. It needs to be permanent. You need AFP in there. You need DFAT, immigration, customs, and you also need QPS presence in there, because you've got, you know, a multitude of issues there. And that's right at the forefront. And thanking the, you know, my constituents, where, you know, families from as far as Afghan and Sri Lanka were apprehended at the airport. Families are coming through there because it's a porous border. And look, I mean no offense in terms of naming any nationality here, but this is a real issue. It's a concern to us. And I think the whole ordeal has been downplayed for far too long.
Okay, well, let's talk about the issues that you're having with climate change adaptation, because obviously you're in a very environmentally sensitive region that obviously has its challenges. Can you let us know what you need to do with that?
We've strategically labelled the paper climate change adaptation because of a number of reasons. We've got six priority communities being Saibai, Boigu, Purma, Masig, Yama and Warbel that are certainly facing the consequences as a result of a rising sea level. Saibai and Boigu, their impact is as a result of inundation, and the other Sanke communities are experiencing coastal erosion. 26.2 million were granted to deliver seawalls. That was a 50-50 arrangement between the state and Commonwealth, and the TSRA provided some dollars to as well towards that same project. We're in a situation where market forces in going out to tender for the work on Saibai to do seawalls, because the protection works ranges from seawalls to earth banding to even sand replenishment in the Sanke communities in terms of bringing your nature strip back. We're in a situation where after tender, we've soon realized that as a result of market forces, Saibai may in fact be basically using most of that investment to do what needs to be done there and to be done with it in terms of completing the project. Because Saibai, you're basically doing a seawall along the foreshore. There's some banding walls that's basically located behind the parts of the community too as well. So we're basically in a difficult position where we are being forced to decide which of our communities survive and which do not.